Hey, Michael here, back for another postseason deep dive for LEGO Masters Season 4 on my podcast, Talk Bricks Masters. We're back today, and I was lucky enough to sit down this time with Season 4's Jordan and Chris to break down their time on the show. Plus, you're definitely going to want to stay tuned as we've got even more interviews coming your way. So with all that said, here's my interview with Jordan and Chris. Well, we've been having such a blast, and the fun doesn't stop here because I've brought, of course, another one of your favorite teams from Season 4 making their deep dive debut. Welcome to the podcast, Jordan and Chris. Say hello to everyone.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hey, everybody. This is Chris.
Yes. Well, we are so excited to have the two of you. Really, I feel like, you know, I think that when I think of the two of you, I think gone way too soon. You know, we were seeing great stuff, you know, and we need to get into it, you know, so I'm so glad to have the two of you on so we can really get into the nitty gritty of your experience on the show. But we typically start on the podcast talking about your experience before the show. So what I'd love to understand is sort of what is your like LEGO origin story, as I like to call it? Like, how did you get involved with the hobby and sort of what took it up a notch for you? Because you kind of have to be a big enough fan or builder to even be eligible for a show like this. So, Chris, why don't we start with you? You know, what's your origin story?
So my origin story just starts from childhood. I was an only child up until a teenager, but that entirety, it was me just playing with bricks while, you know, my mom, single mom, was out working and, you know, trying to just provide for me. But thankfully, the way she provided was through Lego sets and had a blast always building. Very fond, vivid memories of sitting in a center pile of just bricks and surrounded by elements while watching TGIF every Friday. and just building whatever I could come together with my imagination. And I think that's part of the, you know, the allure of Lego in itself. Did go through a dark age period, kind of as I hit that teenage, you know, hormones started kicking in. It was like, man, I think girls are a lot cooler than Lego for a bit. So kind of transitioned into that direction. But while I was deployed, into adulthood, I just saw things that I never thought could be possible with brick. And that's what really drew me back in. And it's had a very, very tight grip on me ever since.
I know that feeling, I love it. And I love that you did it while watching TGIF because, you know, I think people of our age, you know, that was like a formative experience, you know, the exactly. Boy Meets World, the Thank Sabrinas, you. The all that stuff. So I'm with you. But Jordan, you know, tell us, you know, your story with it.
Well, I was an only child for a lot less time than Chris was, but I am the oldest of five.
Wow.
I have a brother who's 18 months apart from me. So we built a lot together and, you know, we would always get like a big Lego set for Christmas and we'd build it together. We had like one of those long, probably, you know, designed for like wrapping paper type bins that we would just rummage through. And, you know, you get to like when you're a kid, it's not like my Lego room now where I have, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of elements, but we like had specific elements memorized how many we had, like, you know, oh, we have, and you don't know the names of them back then, but it was like, you know, a 1x2x3 inverted slope in black. We knew we had 8, you know? And so it's like, I'm looking for this black slope, you know, I have 4, where are the other ones? Are you using them? I think my first Lego set that I bought myself was the medieval minifigure package with like the two Black Falcons,
yeah,
and the peasant, and that sort of like was part of my introduction into and future obsession with Castle.
quick question, Jordan, how many of those inverted slopes do you have now?
More than 8 by a few. And then you know, I even through college, like I did have a dark age. But when I'd come home for Christmas break, like at least one day of Christmas break was always spent in the basement building like this, whatever biggest multicolored castle I could build from all our childhood bricks. The younger siblings beyond my brother never really got into it very hardcore. I'm starting to kind of lure a few of them in as they're having their own kids these days. You know, kind of fast forward into post-college and you know, now I'm not going home every year and I'm not really playing with Lego a whole lot. But my mom knew I was still like, you know, a Lego fan.
Sure.
And she sent me some clipping. Like this is, you know, like not quite pre-internet days, but, you know, for your parents, they're a little slow on the uptake, right? Especially when you live in Alaska and we're like 10 years behind everybody anyway. So she sent me like this magazine clipping and it was this guy had built a scale model of the Ohio State Buckeyes football stadium. And I'm like, how did this guy possibly do this? It's all color coordinated. I'd never seen anything like it. Everything I built as a kid was multicolored from whatever I could scrounge together. I'm like, this guy must have bought like 6,000 race cars to get this many seats for his stadium. Like, how did he do it? And like later on in the article, it's like, oh, you know, and he sourced most of the parts off of BrickLink. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let's look that up. And then that was like, you know, for like many people, the start of the rabbit hole, right? And just spiraled from there. And then, you know, right around that time, it was like the end of the fantasy line. The Lord of the Rings first sets came out. So like for me as a fantasy and castle builder, it was like prime time to get like just hooked right back into it.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, we saw on the show in episode one, not to jump right in, but we did see that in terms of your, you know, team's origin story, that you met on an online Lego forum all about Lego Castle. So talk to us about that and how the two of you met.
Wildly enough, Jordan probably has a bit more to say on it just because I think he was already ingratiated into that community long before I did join, which also, you know, had him get introduced to Mark and Steven, winners of season two.
Sure.
And just that tight knit relationship that the three of them have. But yeah, well, like I said, similarly, along that same time of when I was getting pulled back into it, as Jordan mentioned, Lord of the Rings was coming out, best thing they've done ever. like I think seeing like the printing and stuff they were able to do with the Lord of the Rings figures and just some of those builds, you're just like, yeah, I'm not sure if I really care for the classic stuff anymore when you can see just the amount of detail they're able to pour into like just a single minifig from that line. But around that time is when I was just trying to find more resources and more just build an inspiration just to see what I've been missing the last couple years, or not even really a couple years, more like a good 10, 12. But as I was just looking around on the internet, just scouring everything I could. Yeah, so I came across classiccastle.com. I know it's still up. I don't know how strong the community still is for there now with just so many options and just other avenues to post things. But yeah, I came across that website and yeah, I lurked for a while. Just that's kind of I'm just more of an observer. And then after a while, I was just like, these things are so great that they deserve praise. And I'm like, I don't want to lurk anymore. Like, I want to be a part of this. And so, yeah, registered, came across Jordan, I think, in the trades section, right?
Probably.
Yeah. And so as I mentioned, I was realizing that my massive classic collection wasn't my favorite anymore as I wanted to get more into the current stuff. But as I'm sure anyone can imagine, so there's not just a Target or a Toys R Us in Afghanistan that you just go and buy the new set from. So I was trying to handle some trades to get some of the new stuff shipped out to me. And that's how Jordan and I came to be friends.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was really pretty entrenched into that website and was for a number of years, I think even after Chris and I met. At one point, I had, I think, the most posts of anybody who wasn't an administrator, despite the site already being, you know, like 10 years old by the time I got there. So I was just like just all over the place on that thing. And when you're first kind of building your collection, I think a lot of the trades and stuff has a lot of appeal because everybody has stuff that you don't have. Right. So you're like, oh, I have three of these. I definitely want to trade one of these for one of those. And especially like, you know, relatively fresh out of college, it's the recession, disposable income isn't super like high. So you just can't go around just buying everything you want. It's sort of like you're sort of like back to that, like, you know, trading economy, primitive type of a situation. So I'm like lurking all over the place in the, I'm all over the place in the buy sell trade. And Chris is like the perfect trade partner because I'm like very tied to the nostalgia of yellow minifigures. And so I'm like converting all of my Lord of the Rings stuff to yellows, and he wants all the flesh heads. So I'm like, I don't want any of this trash. Like, this is great. This guy wants all my fleshy heads and hands that I don't care about anyway. And Chris was like loaded to the gills on Dragon Masters and like all the classic factions that I
still
sort of missed out on. and so we were making trades, and I think like the first trade, you know, I have to send like this weird address, and I'm like, what is this thing? Like, this is not an address I've seen before, and I've sent a lot of trades out. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm deployed in Afghanistan right now. I'm like, this dude is insane. He's like yeah, I've just got a footlocker that I just have loaded with minifigures out here in literally the middle of nowhere in the dunes. And so like, then we get to talking and, you know, you find out like, you sort of have like a lot of shared other interests outside of Lego that are not necessarily like super common to the community, because we are like a bunch of nerds and geeks, and that's cool. But like Chris and I also like football, and like, you know, we go out on the weekend or we go to the gym, and it's like, I was like, oh, this guy's kind of like just like a normal guy. So yeah, so we just kind of started kind of a, between all the correspondence back and forth with all the trades, just started to build a friendship, and then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Amazing, amazing. Well, so, you know, now you guys are well established into the Castle community. A show comes around called Lego Masters, and, you know, we know now that you were on season 4, but what was your journey getting onto the show and, you know, your partnership kind of going to that next level of being on TV?
The journey was a lot like you trying to get me on this call on time. I'll say that for
me. Me dragging him, you know.
Literally.
So actually, the show called me for season 1. And, you know, it's a huge community, but we're pretty tight knit. I think they were really, casting the nets far and wide. They didn't really know what they were trying to, what kind of people they were trying to get. And, you know, kind of like at the end of my call, they're like, hey, do you have 5 people that you would recommend, you know, that we call and contact to possibly be on the show? I'm sure I threw Mark and Steven's names out there at that time. If Steven was even old enough to go on, I don't know. Mark and Steven actually, Steven especially, I think he, our relationship sticks out in his mind because I was the very first person to message him on an online forum on Classic Castle, like when he came online. So like, we, like when I was down there for the show, we were able to link up for the first time in person in our, like, you know, 10 plus years of friendship, which was awesome. Their mom came out and like gave me a big hug, and so that was cool. So it's a really tight-knit community, and somehow somebody threw my name out there, and I was kind of in a position work-wise where I had a lot of day-to-day responsibilities where I had to be in person, and it was just going to be really difficult to shake loose for the show. And I kind of like pitched a couple ideas, but we didn't really pursue it real hard. And then, kind of let it ride for a little bit. And then I think like the light bulb came on when, season 3, there was, you know, a couple of doctors on the show, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm an engineer. Here's some other white collar dudes who somehow managed to shake free from a very demanding profession to find time to make this happen. I'm like, maybe it's time to like revisit this. And just as you're kind of thinking that, then sure enough, the show calls again and they're like, hey, we're interested. You know, are you interested? And I'm like, yes, I have a guy. Let me give you the pitch. They liked it. And so I think I was on the phone with them for a while, and I got off the phone and I was like, all right, hey, Chris, like, you want to be on Lego Masters? And he's like, what? Like, I'm pretty sure I just woke him up. You know, he hadn't had his bacon yet. And the reception was like not super warm, but I was like, come on, like, this is going to be awesome. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I guess so, you know, that's how I remember it, at least.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I'm like, love Lego, love doing it. But in my mind, it like, as I feel like as warm as I can sometimes be, the idea of just like now doing this on TV show and kind of, you know, doing on, putting on for a show was just like, not really my thing. so when he was proposing the idea, it was definitely, if you want to, man, like, all right, let's go, like, whatever.
Well, that's so funny. Cause I really like, I feel like Chris, like when we saw you on the show, I almost feel like you're the bigger personality. Like, you would have wanted to be on TV, but it's sounding like you were the one who had to be convinced.
Definitely. And then what was funny, on a lot of our casting, calls and just the interviews, the casting people, as well as Jordan, had to consistently nudge me like, smile, dude, like be alive, act like you want this. I'm like, I already told him I want to be here. I'm sitting here on the call already. Like, it was hilarious.
So Michael, I will tell you, Chris is the bigger personality, but he's the bigger personality in like short spurts. He's a sprinter, you know. And so like, some of these days, like some of the calls are like multiple hours long. And like, you feel like the like tour guide Barbie at the end of it. You're like, oh, my face hurts from smiling so much. But it's not that it's like really forced, you know, you're having a great time, but you know, it can be, you know, a big investment, especially like emotionally, energy wise. And then you get on set and oh my God, now you're out there, you know, just sweating the whole time. And
and here's the thing with me, like I eat a lot. And so the idea of sitting, like, I'll just say this. So there was a brief moment when whenever Jordan's answering questions, I'm actually grabbing a plate of food and eating, like, as we're doing this. Like, when we said we're going to be on here for maybe an hour, there's no way. In my mind, I already knew, like, there's no way I can do that without more food. Like, I can't. So, and without food, oh my, it's grueling. It's grueling.
Obviously, you were able to drag Chris along on this process. You're cast on the show and, you know, it's the first episode, but it's also your first chance to be in the studio, to be in front of cameras, to build with the Brick Pit. What was it like that first episode and sort of like the shell shock, perhaps, of finally being there?
I'm getting goosebumps now again, just thinking about it. So like, I was like a mega fan of the show, you know, I'd seen every episode. I'd watched like the Australian ones. Obviously huge fan of Mark and Steven on their run to the end. Tyler, winner of season one, I'd been a follower of his stuff, on Instagram prior to that. And just like, you know, a lot of people, and I'd met Jamie before at BrickCon, Brickmaster Jamie. So like, I'm like, this is like, you know, my dream. Like, I'm walking out on set and I'm looking around and I'm just trying to soak it all in. And it was like just crazy.
For sure. I mean, I can only imagine, but, you know, Chris, what was it like for you? I imagine you maybe felt happy that there's a craft services table or something in the back.
No, not even. However, I will say production is amazing because they specifically ask like, hey, what snacks do you like? And they were on it. So that was that was beautiful. And there were definitely times during the challenges where Jordan could probably see me like mentally fading. And he was like, hey bro, grab a ginger ale, go grab some snacks. I'm like, you're absolutely right. I need food.
That's amazing. It reminds me of I don't know if you ever watched Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, that show on TLC about the kids' pageants, but they used to give her the go-go juice, you know, which was like Mountain Dew to get her like hyped up for the pageants. And exactly, I feel like that's what Jordan was doing with you, you know, drink your go-go juice. We got to build.
Chug a ginger ale.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, amazing. Well, this first episode, let's really get into it, was the Brick Lake episode. So you're tasked with putting sort of your personalities into a boat, you know, and we've all built floating boats, right? I mean, that's a very common, no, I'm just kidding, but, so it's your first challenge. What was that like? You know, how did you come up with your concept and, you know, what was it like sort of building under the clock for that first episode?
I feel like we brainstormed together pretty well. It wasn't usually any, we never suffered from any shortage of ideas for the most part. The benefit for those who, you know, spoiler alert, the success we had on the first episode, I think was very much tied to the fact that we were giving a very well-defined, constrained footprint. Like, they gave us the boat hull. You know, here's your maximum height, you know, don't build over the back where you have to have the motor coming out. And so we were pretty well like tied to a very limited, you know, geometric footprint. And that serves us well because Chris and I both like to build big, you know, we're working on a diorama right now, which is going to be as big as some entire castle sections at conventions, if we ever finish it. But we're on like year three of a 2-year project and I'm getting married this year. So it's next year will be like year 4 or 5, like, you know, so like we're used to like sort of unlimited time extensions. We've been hanging out with Lewis and he's been working on a project and he's built more in like the last couple of days. Chris and I have probably built collectively like in a couple of months because we just are like tediously slow builders, but we have big ideas. So I think we came up, we're like, you know, it's supposed to sort of represent our personality and Chris and I both being like the castle guys. We're like, we got to rep castle really hard with this one.
Yes. And you definitely did. I mean, there was some really like awesome touches. First of all, the build just looked so clean, but there was like, you know, some of the party areas, obviously I think we saw in the episode, Brickmaster Amy sort of challenged you to bring that color, make it feel like a party. But we also just saw some like really lovely techniques, like at the top, you know, of those kind of towers, those kind of rounded turrets that you had were just like they didn't even give it enough credit. But, you know, what stood out to you from this build and what were the details and such that you were especially proud of?
I think one of my favorite things was when we came up with the idea for the equalizer bars. And Jordan was like, we can put a light effect in this so it actually looks like this party's actually bumping on this boat. And for me, I think that was probably the coolest part. Another part that stood out to me was, in addition to the light, Jordan wanting to add a 17th layer of motion at every possible place on that ship. Like, so those were probably the two things that stood out to me the most.
Yes. I mean, you had those dragons, you know, spinning around, you had the turntable spinning. I mean, for the first challenge, you weren't going, you know, in easy mode, you know, you're putting it all out there.
Absolutely.
No, we felt like we had the probably some of the best grasp of like the motor functions and stuff going into it. Now, a lot of teams caught up pretty quickly, but I was like determined that I was going to like, we were going to flex on these guys and show them what was up and set the bar as high as humanly possible. So like, I think there were three or four battery packs on there. And like, you know, one of those is like a Mindstorm, or not Mindstorms. That's the old, what's the new one? It's the Spike Prime hubs in there. It's like programmable. So like Chris said, I had written a little code to have like the lights, the power level of the lights kind of like randomly flicker so that it looked like those equalizer lights were like bumping. We had the spinning turntable up at the top, like you said, the two spinning dragons. Really, I think the thing I'm almost most proud of is just that we came up with a great pun for the boat. Which was the nightlife, right?
Yeah.
With a K-N-I-G-H-T, because that's very on brand for me specifically, with the cheesy puns. And Chris is on brand with rolling his eyes at everything I say. So
I thought you were going to say it was on brand because you're like a huge partier and you're out every night.
Chris.
So to be fair, the reason I was still sleeping today is because I went out last night. So, it actually is very, very much on brand.
And we actually pivoted, and it wasn't really like a huge pivot, so I don't think the show made a big deal of it. But if you watch that episode again, you'll notice we talk about it being a Ren Faire, and they kind of play like some like nice like Ren Faire type music in the background as we're describing what we're talking about. We kind of pivoted like a third of the way in. We weren't really like feeling the energy. Like we're just kind of plugging through it, and we're like, how are we going to make this into like a really exciting thing?
Right.
And then I don't know how we, if you, Chris, you came up with it or I did.
No, it was you. So we were basically discussing and kind of debating on the positioning of the dragon.
Right.
And initially it was going to kind of be just, it wasn't really going to be a centerpiece. It was going to be like relaxing while everybody was partying around it. But then as he was building it, we were like, all right, where are we going to pose this? How are we going to do this? And as we were talking about the posing for it, he was like, wait, but what if the dragon is actually the DJ of the party? And then that's where everything really just started rolling, like really rolling smoothly for us in terms of what we were going to do with the build.
DJ Dragon!
Yes, you said be entertained by one of the best DJs in the entire kingdom with his working turntable. And of course, we have some dragons flying overhead to add the ambiance, which, you know, you need dragons for any party.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Any mini party is not a party without dragons, of course.
Yeah. well, you know, this was a really exceptional build, and obviously you did quite well, you know, just in terms of what you're able to put together, but it was able to sail just fine. And, you know, in the judging presentation, we see the winner crowned, but we've heard through the grapevine that there may have been a top two that we didn't get to see, and that this build was in the top two.
The grapevine, you know, can be pretty reliable in some situations. And we did have a top two, and the nightlife was fortunate enough to be picked. So we really felt like we had made a good showing. We really thought that we had a really strong shot at winning when we were up there. You know, Chris and I both, I think, expect to hear our names called as the winners on that one. And we almost felt like it was a challenge to the judges, like to like, hey, we see what you guys can do, and we want you to push even harder.
Yeah,
literally.
I know sometimes they can be like that for sure. But you know, listen, what we're talking about how dragons make the party, I guess really Chai makes the party, you know, so, you know, you live and you learn, but, we then move on to the next episode, which is the Catropolis episode. And of course the episode starts with these kittens running out. You know, what was your reaction to this? You know, are you cat people? Was this exciting for you?
Not exactly.
I mean, if I'm being honest, I was trying not to sneeze and go into anaphylactic shock, but, I mean, love animals. I just don't think they love me the same.
Oh no.
Yeah, and I've always been a dog person as well, so.
Yeah, well, you know what? Cats aren't for everyone, but, you know, you did have a quite cute cat with Penelope, who loves fish and fish tanks, and you put together Princess Penelope's Perfect Palace, and this was a really, you know, fun build, but talk to us just about how you came up with this concept and, you know, how you translated sort of the dossier about Penelope into this build.
Well, I'll definitely let Jordan go into this one, because you should also mention how he pretty much injured at least three people in the rushing, in the storming of the castle to get that Penelope back.
Yeah, there was like a torn fingernail. You know, Amy, she is on the grandma's team, but she runs marathons. She's a tough lady. And I think like I and Christopher all got to Penelope at the same time. And like, I just kind of like just did the whole like grip and rip, you know, and I was determined to get that one, because I really had the idea for the fish tank, like right out as soon as I saw that she was into fish, like a centerpiece of a fish tank and a fish themed build sort of like came to me immediately. And you know, a lot of the other cats, kittens had other great traits and stuff, but none of them were speaking to me in terms of like a clear visual thing. Like some of the concepts are a little bit more abstract, you know, and I'm an engineer. I like, you know, concrete ideas. So fish, there was another one that liked birds, and I thought that could be another thing. And the other traits for Penelope that were on the card were that she likes to sit in a sunny spot and look out the window, and she's high maintenance. So that's how we kind of blended like the Princess Penelope and the Pet Palace.
I love it. But we also, you know, got to know the two of you a little bit. You know, we hear you're engineers, you're best friends. And you know, you met while Chris was deployed. But I love, you know, your quote, Chris, where you say, "Don't get confused. Jordan wasn't in the military. He's the softest boy I know."
When that made the final cut, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I just got put on blast like that on national TV. But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
there's an element of truth to it. Between the two of us, Chris is definitely the tougher character, and I'm definitely like the softer fella, so I'll give him that. If anything, all my recent injuries lately, you know, the connective tissue in my body is the softest part.
Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we definitely saw that this was a very ambitious build, is what Will called it during the build phase. You know, you have you know, the ground floor with the large aquarium, there was the catwalk, there was, you know, a place for her to survey the kingdom. I mean, you really were trying to put a lot into this build. But, you know, we didn't, you know, it was quick to notice that you were building it all in these modules, and you didn't have sort of the, you know, you weren't kind of connecting them as you went. So talk to us about just like what that was really like. Obviously, we saw sort of how it was portrayed in the show. But what was it like from your perspective? And what do we not understand about all that?
I think the idea between the modules was, well, first of all, you know, Chris and I, not being cat people, you know, we had our kitten with us, you know, initially, and then we sort of like we're like, all right, hand her back to the handlers, let's get this thing out of the way and let's get to work, right? So in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, well, like, what is the kind of joke about like cats? It's like, you'll spend all this money on a toy, but they want to like play in the box, right, that the thing comes in. So I was like, what if we do like a series of boxes, but we make them like really cool boxes, and then, you know, we can kind of divide and conquer that way. Because one thing that's really challenging about the building for the show, that maybe a lot of people don't think about, is you're sharing a pretty small work area. And, you know, they really would prefer that you kind of stand on the same side of the table so that when they're taking the different shots and stuff that, you know, they get good footage, which makes total sense. But it's just not conducive for working on something together very easily. So a lot of teams that find a lot of success, I think they will divide up the build into different parts and kind of work on those independently. So that was sort of what we were trying to do. And I went after the fish tank, and then Chris was working on like the goldfish cube. And then the idea was, you know, we knew exactly how we wanted to orient everything, and we'll just throw this thing together at the end and it'll all come together and it's going to be awesome.
that was the idea anyway. I'm not, I don't know if it's a fun fact or not, but I actually haven't seen any of the seasons, so I don't know how it's portrayed, but yeah, definitely that was the idea. And I'm not sure if they showed us truly believing that, because that was genuinely the case, like where we really thought divide and conquer, handle these modules on our own, and because we're visualizing the same thing, yeah, it'll come together easy peasy. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, I think, you know, we did see, like you say, you know, you get it to the podium, but there's no connection points between the models, and that you said the Brickmasters aren't Brickmasters for nothing. They're definitely going to notice. And we did see that. Jamie did notice. And, you know, we definitely saw something that I feel like we've never seen, where, you know, Jamie sort of has to say, you know, we don't really feel comfortable, you know, letting Penelope explore your whole model because of the stability. You know, so he says, I forget if I have the quote. Oh yeah. He says, you really created a massive model, but I do have to say, this is the one model in the entire room that I don't feel comfortable with from a safety perspective for Penelope. You know, so what was it like during this judging phase? Because you know that you're putting up, I mean, really a cool model. I mean, the aquarium section, so cool. You know, like you have those interesting boxes, but you're getting this feedback about sort of the structure, the safety for poor Penelope. You know, what was that like from your perspective?
Well, right now in the moment, hearing that quote, I'm just thinking, hell yeah, Jordan, most dangerous build ever.
Yeah.
But in that moment, terrifying. Of course, I'm telling Jordan as we're going back that this is an automatic disqualifier. Like, regardless of what we've put up here, that notion, that line alone is going to put us from top two to bottom two immediately.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm really kind of just like surveying the room and hoping there's something worse that will save us for another week.
Yeah. We, you know, the Catropolis was all laid out. Kind of they had the display and like all the modules, everybody's builds are all on these kind of octagonal pieces of wood that sort of defines the footprint of your build. And because we were building everything in pieces, when we came back to put it together, we realized we'd actually overbuilt everything by like 25 to 30, 40% bigger than would fit on this thing. So like
the allowable footprint. Yeah.
If we'd been able to just lay it out on the table, it would have gone together the way we had envisioned it. But as we started to try to cram and condense it into this smaller footprint, then all of a sudden the angles that we wanted to have and the space that we needed, like even just for the catwalk, which was a big part of the part that wasn't connected, you know, there just wasn't room. And because we'd left ourselves like 15 minutes to throw this thing together at the end, the adaptation time that we needed to make some adjustments was just like non-existent. Right. So, it was really some of the features that people probably didn't see very well on the show, but I'll describe were the catwalk actually had chasing lights down both sides. So they were like, you know, like six lights on each side, and they were like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And like, they kind of chased each other up and down.
Go ahead, Jordan, say it. It was a catwalk.
Jesus Christ. It was a catwalk. I mean, right. Like we did try to cram in as many puns as possible. And I think some of that came across. And when Will came over and was talking to us, we said we were building furiously to finish on time. I think probably at some point in one of the cuts that we, you know, we said something was a catastrophe.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other feature that was really great, that maybe in hindsight was a big thing that might have saved us, was I made this really great cat toy that was like twitching, and it was on the end of like a double linked whatever the longest Technic axle is you can buy. So this thing is like hanging way out there, and it's flexing because it's so long, and I had like this variable power with random like intervals. And so this thing is making like this very convincing with twitching motion with like a couple little minifigure accessory chains and a minifigure cape, like a little cat toy. And so it looked really great. And I, the tricky part with those like Spike Prime hubs is, you know, if like your phone that you're controlling it with turns off, then the motor like turns off and stuff. Yeah. So it didn't stay twitching through the whole judging process. And so I think a lot of that movement got, missed in the final cut, but, really a lot of great features outside of the fish tank. The thing that really was crushing to me was the safety part. I'm not a big cat fan, but you know, I do love animals. We really actually made the aquarium double walled, which took a lot of time because we had all the plants and like the fish gravel and everything, the fish on the inside. But I really wanted to separate that from Penelope so that she couldn't get into any little pieces while she's inside and eat something when somebody couldn't get, you know, to her quick enough to stop her. So like we really had like safety on our mind for the kitten the whole time. And then ultimately the actual stability of the thing ended up being kind of our downfall, which for me as a civil engineer is like the biggest embarrassment out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And shout out to Alex for literally saving us. They had already gotten their build to set to the final spot. And if it wasn't for Alex coming over and giving us an extra hand to stabilize that thing as we were moving it, which you did see in the episode, we would not have gotten that to the final resting place in one piece. Like the countdown that they show in the episode, sometimes you kind of wonder how manufactured that is. Not in this case. Our fingernails left that wood platform with zeros on the clock. So big shout out to Alex for delivering us on that.
I'm also half sorry because I was told that I gave him the one of the nastiest side eyes I've ever delivered as he came and approached our build. So my bad, Alex. I love you.
Well, you know, we love to see that, and Alex and Lewis too. You know, we saw them helping multiple teams throughout the season, so it's sort of nice to hear that was true to their character. But yes, you know, unfortunately, you know, because of those stability issues, you know, you did land in the bottom two, like you'd mentioned, Chris. And we've seen some of these sort of like these elements that are sort of like integral to the challenge be the reason that teams go home, you know, all the time. You know, I think even back to season one during the bridge challenge, when Mel and Jermaine's build was like two plates shy of the level requirement for the bridge, you know, that was really what sent them home. So it could have been that for you, for sure, but thankfully it wasn't. You know, so you were safe this round. And unfortunately we had to say goodbye to Karen and Amy. But talk to me then about what it was like kind of going through that close call, and now you've got to sort of get yourself back together to take on the next challenge.
For that, I felt like we then just kind of left the studio mentally charting the shortcomings of that challenge and just trying to like mentally check off how we could remediate that for the next one. Like we knew that our biggest hurdle, which still carried on into the next challenge, was just time management. Like I don't think there's any short-sightedness in terms of ideas, creativity, and just our capability. But yeah, that clock is the genuine devil.
Yes, Moto used to call it Clockzilla. So yes, I totally believe it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so now we're heading into episode three. This is Volcanic Brickruptions, and you know the show is really taking you all on a journey of all the crazy challenges. But there were five different environments with this one, and we heard, you know, about Jordan's sprint, you know, for Penelope, but you ended up with the desert. So I'm curious, was this one, Jordan, that you sprinted for and really wanted, or was there some other story to how you got this environment?
I don't think that we particularly were invested on any of the environments specifically. Right. So we just kind of like we walked over to whatever the one was that we got to. I think after the cat one, there was like a no sprinting rule in place. So unfortunately, I was the tallest cast member on our season, which probably contributed to us being put on the back set of risers. when Will is presenting the challenge. So there's a little disadvantage in terms of first pick. You know, we just were not really too bummed or excited one way or the other with what we got on that one.
Yeah. I'm always surprised they don't do more random, like, pick out of a hat things. Like, I think back to the superhero challenge, the good versus evil in season one, where they each like picked a minifigure out of a hat, or the castle challenge that we saw in season three, you know, again, a minifigure out of a hat. So I don't know. I think we need to bring back more. Speaking of safety, you know, not just for our kittens, but for our contestants, we've heard lots of stories about how those sprints go awry. So I don't know. I think picking figures out of a hat or something sounds good to me.
probably for safety, but I would probably imagine that the sprints are pretty exciting.
Well, then what if it's like a giant spinning wheel, like Wheel of Fortune or Price is Right, like something, you know, very visual, very colorful. Maybe that could be interesting.
or
I'm all for it.
They should do a giant Plinko board.
Plinko board would be cool. Yeah.
Listen, I think there should be, I think we're discovering now, there should be a Price is Right challenge.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, what if Will presents, you know, a Lego set, and you have to guess the retail price of that set, and they have the what's the yodeling guy, the climbing guy.
Yeah.
And whoever gets closest to the top of the mountain gets the first pick.
Yes. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have the synergy because it's on two different networks. So maybe the only challenge you'll end up getting is like a Masked Singer challenge or something like that, which I'm glad we've never gotten before. But so for volcanic brick eruptions, like I said, you had the desert environment and your build was the Ancient Awakening. So, you know, your build was an Egyptian type theme. Archaeologists had disturbed an ancient power, and this obelisk would be erupting out of it. So talk to us about this story, because, you know, it was kind of an elaborate story. So talk to us about how you got to this concept.
Well, the funny part, based on what Chris said before, because we walked out of that last challenge, just feeling drained. Like, we just about got chopped, and we're like, man, like, we should be here for a while longer. Like, we need to start playing it safe. Right. And then it like comes along the volcanic challenge, and we're like, how about we do something that doesn't look like a volcano at all? Right. And we're like, it's going to be so unique. It's going to be great. And, you know, when we thought about desert, I'm sure there are some volcanoes in the desert, but it doesn't immediately spring to mind. So this is one where we thought, well, what if we take the iconography of a volcano, which is kind of, you know, the same shape as a pyramid. And what if we did like a pyramid and the lava came erupting out of that? And then, you know, then we had the idea for, actually originally it was going to be a small obelisk that was going to raise up. As we started going, like, Chris is pitching this other idea of doing, like, he's like, what if we go with, it's just like a mummy coming out of the desert, and like, the lava is like coming out of the head of the mummy, and like we spent some time I was like I can try to build a skull. Like, I've never brick built a skull before, but let's try it. Like, spent, you know, like 20-30 minutes trying that, and I was really struggling, and thank God we didn't do that, because that was even less of a volcano than what we actually did. But you know, Chris's daughter was interested in that kind of Egyptology and archaeology, and we tied some of made some of her initials out of like hieroglyphs and put it on the obelisk. And so eventually it pivoted to this, the snake was going to come out, and, you know, we wanted to use the lava to trigger a movement. And so I, again, playing it safe, right, I've come up with the most complicated idea in the room of this huge flywheel with a linear actuator and this cobra that's going to come up out of, and I wanted to do like trap doors so that it would like literally seem like it was popping out of the sand. And we positioned we get to kind of choose where our lava tube came out of the build, and we kind of put it in the back corner. And then as we were building, like, oh, we don't have room to do a pyramid, because it would have to be like the world's tallest and skinniest pyramids because of where we picked this thing to be on the back corner. So we had enough room for this big mechanism. Like, oh, well, if we're going to go tall and skinny, what if we just do a big tall obelisk? Like, that's a cool Egyptian, you know, icon, which I thought was a lot more common knowledge than apparently it is, because a lot of people since have been like, I never even heard of an obelisk until then.
Well, listen, you clearly have, you know, more of a, you know, deep knowledge on all of this stuff than the average Joe. But you know, I think in all honesty, it was a very cool build. You know, I mean, I think it really harkened back to another classic Lego theme with Adventurers. You even had sort of that like Pharaoh head, you know, kind of Sphinx build that felt exactly straight out of the Adventurers.
Johnny Thunder.
Yeah. Okay. I had to imagine that was done on purpose, but you know, talk to us about sort of the details of the build that you were proud of.
So similar to what Jordan was mentioning for me, and I think this is what hurt the most for me was that this is a build where I felt like I was incorporating elements of my daughter and, you know, kind of giving like an unspoken or subtle shout out to her. And then that's the one we go home on. So yeah, that one actually real, that's probably what stung the most. But yeah, for me, just the details of the amount of work and technicality that Jordan put into that actuator, into that flywheel, the snake itself, the idea of using this lava to completely fuel the movement for the snake to pop up out of the sand. And then, like I said, just all just the hieroglyphs of my daughter's name on the obelisk were probably my favorite parts.
Yeah. I mean, and the snake itself was such a unique design. Like, I mean, it definitely stood out. I think, you know, the hard part was just probably all the structure underneath that was required to make that snake work probably took away time from adding all the little details and such that you wanted, I'm sure, to add. But, you know, I think this one was very cool. But, you know, we see the lava start to flow. It kind of is flowing down two sides of the obelisk, and it's not ultimately turning this wheel. And it's hard because, you know, as we've talked to a lot of the contestants, you know, this wasn't one you could test. You know, you didn't have a sense of how viscous the lava would be, exactly how it would come out. Would it be straight up? Would it be, you know, would it be slow? Would it be fast? You know, there's so many factors sort of with that from an engineering challenge, I have to imagine, you know, that would be hard to anticipate. So, you know, talk to us about just like that mechanism and kind of, I'm sure you've thought about it, but is there anything that you could have done to get it to work now knowing how the lava worked?
Yeah, I think so.
Anything different to get it to work, I'm just going to say I don't actually even care. We just would have done something that was more volcano shaped.
Yeah.
I think that would have been enough because I don't recall most of the lava's effect working. Did it, Jordan?
No, or if the movements did happen, they were really simple. I mean, I think that the judges definitely appreciated the technical expertise that we put into this one. You know, we really wanted to kind of show off something that nobody else could do, at least at that stage of the competition. And really, I had that the snake mechanism was working pretty quickly. It took me a while to build the flywheel because the flywheel was pretty big. You're kind of scrounging around for parts that how am I going to make this thing? Because you don't really know what the pit has at week three for something this technical, right? So I'm like in the technic bin and trying to find stuff that'll work. And that did take some time. What actually took a long time, it was everything related to working around the mechanism because the idea, we really wanted this to be a surprise. I didn't want anybody to see the flywheel turning. I wanted this cobra to just like magically rise out of the desert, right? So we had to build this big sand dune over the flywheel. We had to elevate everything on that build up half the diameter of the wheel so that the wheel had room to spin. So right. Like building up all that substructure and elevating everything like just takes a lot of time to add columns and stuff and plate over it. Especially since I don't think that we had like 32 by 32 tan base plates. So we're kind of like plating over this whole thing with whatever the biggest size, you know, base plates they have. So the mechanism itself, super proud of it. I think that it was really cool. We were definitely disappointed with the lava started coming out and it was just kind of like, blah, 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 blah. We were definitely ready for a lot more of like this is going to be a show stopping cinematic effect. And then you get what you get. Like you said, you don't get to test it. So, shame on us for taking a big risk on something that was so, you know, up in the air.
Yeah. It's hard because I think about even like season two with the hero shot challenge, you know, Zach right. and Tim, they said, you know, when this goes off, you're going to see the house fall down and it's going to have the explosion, you know, build that they put down there. And when you promise sort of this cause and effect, you know, they really want to see it. And so I think it's, you know, it wasn't probably the playing it safe that it sounds like you guys wanted to do. But I also sort of appreciate that, like, you were having so much fun, like you couldn't help in some ways, but try some things out to get to play, you know, with all these bricks in a way that you don't get to at home, you know, that, you know, if you're going to be challenged in this way, like I don't know. I'm going to build a flywheel. I'm on TV. Let's go. You know, so yeah. I think that there's always going to be something about that that I just really respect about sort of how this all went about. But there was one other character moment in the episode that I wanted to ask about. You know, Chris, it seemed like you were really clocking all the other teams in this episode. You know, you said Poppy was ready to scrap. Ben looks small, but he'll throw fisticuffs. And you really were saying, know your enemies. And so talk to us about this. You know, we love seeing these sort of character moments, but it looks like you were ready. You know, whatever was going to come your way, you were going to throw down.
So again, unfortunately, I haven't seen it, so I forgot about that. But Jordan can probably further cement this. But I was definitely attempting to be in every team's head. There was not a team on set that I was not poking at some moment, just like trying to affect their game at any other point. For me, I was like, this is not just a building challenge. This is constant psychological warfare. And so, yeah, and I think we were right beside Poppy and Ben in that episode, correct?
We were.
Yeah,
so
and then we had the same region. And so it was just very, very funny, especially when, you know, Will and the brick masters, they would come over and just, you know, say, you know, hey, you guys are right next to each other. How's that working out? And so, yeah, just had to let it be known that the gauntlets were thrown, the gloves were on.
I like it. I mean, I know that, you know, we'll talk about it later, like, you know, that everyone's all about the friends that they make, but I like people who come there to play, you know, like I want to know you want it. You know, so I'm totally down with that. And glad that you're also like having some cheeky fun on set with your friends.
Oh, constantly. Cause yeah, just like how we were mentioning earlier, like while it was slightly pulling teeth to get me there. But like once we were there, Jordan could definitely, he knows that I was in it. Like we're here, we're going to do it.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, you know, unfortunately, this, like we talked about, is the episode where we say goodbye to the two of you. And, you know, ultimately it seems like the major sort of criticism or critique of the build was just that they were missing your volcano. And it's tough because we've seen sort of some of this feedback in the past. You know, the one that always comes to mind for me that'll leave me brokenhearted forever was when Dave and Richard were sent home from season two on the land and sea challenge. So they had built, you know, this penguin, and they had built like, it was like a rock and roll penguin that was out, you know, on this, you know, busking on the street. And had the judges appreciated their interpretation, I think it could have been the best build, you know? And so,
absolutely.
So there's a part of me that sort of feels like that's what happened here too, which is like, had, you know, to your point, like, had you done the skeleton or had you done this obelisk and they were like, way to reimagine the challenge. You know, we never would have thought of an obelisk, but, you know, you just killed it. Like, you know, had sort of they appreciated your take on it, I think, you know, this was a really rich scene and, you know, your obelisk was well built. It had great color. Like, you know, it could have been, you know, something that at least kept you safe till next week. But I think sometimes they get very rigid, whether it's the strict rules or like, this is a volcano challenge, I must see a rock, you know, that it's just tough. It's so tough. But I feel like that's like why I'm left a little crushed by all this. I can't imagine you weren't upset. But just, you know, one of the things that we saw was a really touching send off for the two of you. You know, Chris, you know, I'm going to tell you what you said on the show because, you know, you didn't watch it, but I'll tell you. You said, you know, it's honestly been a blessing being here, being able to show what we could do. But I made a lot of amazing friends here that I hope to remain in contact with for a long time. You go on to say, I am disappointed, but I'm not upset. Despite this being a competition, it's going to be very difficult to leave everyone behind. I've made lifelong friends here. So what was it like, you know, looking back on this experience, saying goodbye to the show, saying goodbye to these friends, you know, sort of like now that you have a little bit of distance, you know, what was this moment like for you and what are you taking away?
The moment sucked. I mean, the moment was awful. Like I wanted to punch air. Like I was just like, and again, yeah, it wasn't, I think that feeling was not towards anyone, but it was just knowing that Jordan and I had so much more to show.
Yeah.
Like there was, we were not done. I did not feel, I guess similar to what you were saying just a moment ago, just in regarding like interpretation. So for me, I didn't feel like we like we necessarily failed the challenge. So it just it, in that moment just sucked going home for it. And then, but at the end of the challenge where we're taking everything up, I remember looking at Jordan saying, so we're the one build that stands out. And Jordan said, well, this could be a good thing or a very bad thing. And we just kind of laughed at that. Because truly, like, while not every build was a volcano, the other builds somewhat, you know, they visualized the they looked like a volcano. Yes, they were structured in the same fashion as a volcano. So we definitely kind of had a funny moment, you know, right there as we're taking our builds up to be lined up. But my takeaway honestly was the cast. My takeaway was the production team. My takeaway was the hair and makeup team, like just everything, the audio visual people, the wardrobe team. Like that was my takeaway. Maybe you can hold this question in your pocket for when you speak to anybody else in the season, but I told them straight up, I did not go there to make any friends. I went there as if I was still in the military. I had a mission I was going to execute, and it did not matter what was going to be falling at my feet at the end of it. And being able to have a completely revolutionary change in perspective after speaking to everyone, conversing with them, engaging in just all types of conversation, learning about those people, like it was mind blowing. It was heartwarming, and I literally love everybody on that had a part in the show. Like I don't mean just the cast. I mean all the people that your listeners won't even ever know about. Like they were absolutely amazing. And so yeah, my biggest takeaway is a legitimate family. Like Jordan just said, I've known Jordan for over a decade now. You know, we're going on 13, 14 years of incredible friendship. And I just honestly anticipate that same strength of bond with a lot of these cast members and production. So I'm very thankful for that.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, I mean, it is a special group, to your point, or it takes a special group to put together a show, not just the cast. So like to get the outcome we get, it sort of takes the right inputs, and that's not just the cast. And so it's great to hear that you had such a good experience with them. Jordan, you went on to say, you know, friendships come first. They've always been a hallmark of the Lego community. Somehow that love of little plastic bricks just comes in clutch. Another pun from Jordan. And, you know, you said, how often do you get to do something together like this with one of your best buddies? So I'm just really glad we could do it together. So, you know, what is saying goodbye to the show sort of meant to you, Jordan? And also, like you said, you got to do it with a friend that, you know, you don't live in the same place. You don't get to see all the time. So, what did that mean for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to Chris's point, like we've been friends for probably going on closer to 15 years now. He's going to be in my wedding this fall. and despite that, our time on the show is the most time we've spent together than all of the previous 12 years, 15 years of friendship combined. So, you know, it was just such a special time to do something like that with a really good buddy, and really just, get to actually, you know, rub elbows with him and kind of, like he said, he's thinking about a military, like go to battle on some of this stuff together. And it's so galvanizing to go through an experience like that with one of your best buddies. But it's also really galvanizing when you're going through it together with the rest of the cast, because
yeah,
everybody's under the same pressure. Everybody's at risk of being on the chopping block at the end of every challenge. And when Mike and Brad left on the first challenge, like we were crying. Like there were real tears of sadness for those guys to leave after just the first challenge. So those bonds get built very quickly. It is a hallmark of the Lego community. I really feel that the close knitness of it and the camaraderie, just really kind of unlike a lot of other experiences I've been on other teams or other group environments or whatever. You know, this is truly something where, you know, the real prize is the friends you make along the way.
I love to hear that. Obviously, like you mentioned, Chris, like there was definitely a lot more, you know, kind of in the tank from the two of you. So I'm curious, you know, now having, you know, watched the show, or I guess Chris heard about what happened on the season, are there any of the challenges that were on season 4 that you know, looking at them, you really wish you could have gotten your hands on?
I don't know everything that was involved in the one for one, the brick or reel. I believe was that challenge. But
yeah, is it brick?
Okay. I do think, while I don't know everything that was available as an option for that, I do think that is something that Jordan and I could have crushed. I'm trying to think of the other one. Oh, the sound one. That was the one right after we left. I would have really enjoyed being a part of that one as well, because I think that would have played to my just creativeness. So I would have liked that one. Trying to think of any others. What about you, Jordan? Anything that come to mind?
Oh, the final. I mean, we get 24 hours to build whatever we want, as big as we want.
That too, yeah.
What a disaster. Yeah, one, that would have been. Yeah, we would have had like 4 hours left and be like, why don't we double the size of this thing?
Sounds about right.
Yes. How many more motors could you add? How many more hubs?
No, you don't understand. That was a true problem with Jordan. He was literally like, hey, when you're in the brick pit, were there any more batteries over there? Like, did you find a motor? Like, we are not doing this.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep each other in check. You know, we've heard famously about a lot of teams that had to like have one person that was like the come down to earth person. So it sounds like maybe that was you, Chris, but
definitely.
But honestly, like I said, I think, you know, gone too soon for sure. We know that you had a lot to show us. And so we'll always like maybe be hoping for a redemption season or something like that, where we can get to see all the things that we know that the two of you are capable of. But honestly, I think that you have so much to be proud of. You know, like I said, like, you know, where you could have played it safe, where you could have, you know, sort of taken it easy. I sort of feel like you were like, that's not us. Like, we're going to do the best builds we can every single time. And I feel like that's sort of my takeaway from your experience, which is like a little bit of the go big or go home, but also like, we've got a lot to show. Let's see what we can show them in 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever have you. And so I think you guys have really so much to be proud of. So I hope that you look back at this experience, you know, with obviously positivity about the friendships, but also really about the great work that the two of you are able to do. But of course, everyone's going to be wanting to know, what is next for the two of you? You know, you talked about the multi-year build, you know, so maybe we shouldn't hold our breath for that one, but what's next for the two of you, you know, in the Lego world?
I mean, hold your breath. It's coming. We are determined that this will be delivered at some point. And it's, we're working on a big diorama. And I won't give too much away. I've got a few progress pictures on my Instagram. Chris is like totally opposed to posting any work in progress stuff. He's final production only. So you won't see much of what he's been working on, but, I think it's gonna, hopefully, I mean, my goal is to be a showstopper at BrickCon when we do roll it out.
I love it. You know, so it sounds like, you know, you'll be attending the BrickCon convention. Any other conventions or any other, you know, kind of events or projects or whatever that you're hoping to do?
So we were both supposed to attend Bricks Cascade, but Jordan decided like, hey, you know, I'm just going to have spinal surgery instead. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, twice. Yeah, twice.
Oh, poor guy. But,
yeah. So I attended that. I will be at Brick Slopes in Utah this year, as well as Brick Rodeo this summer. Jordan's wedding is thankfully not the same weekend as BrickCon. So if I can get his then wife, who I believe may be in the background listening, I'm going to try to sneak him away to that the following weekend. So don't. Oh dang, that's her maniacally laughing in the background. She's going to kill me. Save me, Mike.
Oh, and Chris and I are going on a honeymoon. Sorry.
Yeah. And real quick though, Michael, as well, you mentioned a potential redemption season. Well, I have no idea if anything like that is even in discussions or a possibility. I'm just going to, right now, I met him at Brick Cascade and I'm calling out Mark season one. Calling you out right now, and I'm calling Wayne out also from season two, taking shots at everybody I know. No.
Oh, all right. Well, listen, they love the drama, you know, so like now that there's like rivalries in the postseason, I think like they need to do this. So maybe, you know, like MTV's The Challenge, they do kind of seasons like that. They had one called Rivals. And so I think, you know, we need to create, you know, these epic rivalries, this animosity in the Lego community. No, I'm just kidding.
I think it would be funny. And Wayne was great. Like he came here for a convention earlier this year, and that's where he and I met. I was just there as a normal pedestrian. I didn't announce anything, but he saw me, and we had some great conversations. You know, try to meet up for some drinks and stuff as well. So yeah, no, I'm just calling them out just because I want to hang out with them. But Mark, definite rival. Love the guy, but majestic beard, but definitely a rival.
Okay. I love that
Chris is just starting with all of the runner-ups from prior seasons. Like you don't want to pick anybody like low hanging fruit. This again just goes to show we are go big or go home.
And I hope you never change. I hope you never change. But
thank you.
Well, thank you. This takes us sort of to the end of our little journey here. So thank you just for being so generous with all of your stories and everything you're able to share from us. I really feel like we got to learn so much more about your experience. But, you know, we learned a little bit about what you're going to be doing next, but people are going to want to follow you. They're going to want to stay in touch. So, Chris, where can people find what you're up to and stay in touch with you after the podcast?
Well, finding out what I'm up to is probably non-existent, as Jordan was very true on that. I don't post anything that I'm working on. If they reach out to me, they message me, I'll tell them and I'll give them an idea of my progress, but actual photos of that, it's weird to me. It's weird to me. You know, it's funny though. I appreciate when I see people who are doing like a build series video where they're just like, oh, this is what I'm going to, you know, this is part one of this build. And then you see it actually get done. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And I'm just like, nope, never be me though. No rhyme or reason for it, Michael, but that's just how I am. However, I can be reached at Boogie Down Bricks. The Boogie Down is another name for the Bronx, New York City, which is where I was born and raised. And so, yeah, at Boogie Down Bricks on Instagram. My name at Gmail if they wanted to reach out to me via email. And yeah, that's about it. But yeah, feel free to shoot a message. Not on there super often or as often as Jordan sends me memes and other videos for, but I'm trying to be better about it.
I love it. I love it. And Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, you can catch me on Instagram. It's my primary social media these days. AK_Brickster. That's been my screen handle for a long time. Classic Castle, Flickr. So if you want to find me on any of those platforms, the same handle, but AK_Brickster.
Yes. If they want to comment on all your old Classic Castle forums posts, you know, because you have the most, there's a lot to look at, but
I still have run the annual contest over there. I'm still involved. I'm trying to keep it alive.
and Mike, and I'm pretty sure I still have it's not up to date, but it's still relevant. A buy sell trade thread there. So
somebody make him an offer
for some Classic Castle figures. Yeah, feel free to hit me up at Bronx on there.
Well, at least they won't have to ship it quite as far this time. But
there you go. Exactly.
Well, thank you again to the two of you. Just thank you so much. It was so much fun. And hopefully we'll be seeing you, you know, soon. We have to have you back next season. Help us break down some of these episodes. So. I'm thanks again.
Yeah. can we call first dibs on any potential castle related episode for next season?
There you go.
Oh, I don't know. The castle bros, you know, Mark and Steven and Caleb and Jacob are frequent guests. So you might have to fight, you know, so maybe that's another rivalry for you, Chris.
Castle bros now. Mark and Steven, they don't get to be that anymore.
Very true. Very true.
Have it's all on. You want to have a real party.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Castle on castle. Well, thanks again. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks so much, Michael. Have a good one.
Honestly, it was such a fun time getting to chat with Jordan and Chris. We really didn't get enough of them on the show, and it was great to learn more about them here. As I said, next up, I'm hoping to bring you even more interviews, so be sure you stay tuned. And since you've made it this far, don't forget to leave the podcast a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to it now. So if you want to follow along with the podcast, be sure to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it now. If you want even more LEGO content, be sure to check out my YouTube channel, Talk Bricks, where I cover the LEGO news for the week every Saturday. And you can follow the channel on all social media platforms with the username @TalkBricks. And if you want to follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook, it's Talk Bricks Masters. And on Twitter, it's TB Masters. Thanks again, and I'll see you guys next time.